Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, show number 90 with Melissa from travelingwallet.com.
I think it's important to realize that just because we were able to make a good amount of money, that only was for 1 year before I got laid off, that there was a process, there was steps, and it didn't start at that level. It started somewhere else.
It's time for a new American dream, one that doesn't involve working in a cubicle for 40 years, barely scraping by. Whether you're looking to get your financial house in order, invest the money you already have, or discover new paths for wealth creation, you're in the right place. This show is for anyone who has money or wants more. This is the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast.
How's it going, everybody? I'm Scott Trench, and I'm here with my co-host, Mindy Jensen. How are you doing today, Mindy?
Scott, I am doing really great. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. I just got back from a lovely vacation in Mexico. Tracked, of course. I use the quote, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning, several times. It was fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, last weekend I was in Las Vegas and I also used your quote and lived by it the entire time. That was not necessarily the smartest move I've ever made, but I was able to go see Def Leppard, which is a band from the 90s that I have always loved. And holy cannoli, if you like that band, they are playing a stint in Las Vegas and they are so amazing. So stepping down off of my advertisement for Def Leppard, who did not sponsor this show.
Prehistoric bands that Mindy always recommends. Just kidding.
Oh my goodness. They are diamond certified twice on two albums. They are diamond certified. There's only five bands that have done that. I read a lot about them after I saw their show. I'm like, wow, they were really good. Anyway.
Got it.
Okay. So if you like Def Leppard, they're playing in Vegas and they're awesome. Anyway, back to today. I met today's guest a few years ago when my husband invited her over to my house for dinner, as he used to do all the time. And she has a blog called Traveling Wallet, like you said, and she was traveling around our area and she'd reached out to him. And we had a lovely time and I've seen her on various conferences since then. And fast forward to a couple of weeks ago, I saw an article where she was quoted about her non-traditional circumstances surrounding her financial journey. And I was like, I got to get her on the show because she had experienced something that I know other people have experienced and she didn't let it define her. She didn't let it, I don't want to say ruin her life because that's an ugly thing to say, but she didn't let it like stop her from going out and getting what she wanted. And I really wanted to have her on the show today. So I got her because I can do that.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right. Get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED lights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers an 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split, with 70% of profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, get paid first. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of the physical asset provide additional security in case of borrower default. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by redirecting your funds from Wall Street to Main Street, supporting local economies and generating profits simultaneously. This investment is reserved for accredited investors, but if you are not accredited, Pine Financial has options for you too. Take control of your investments and secure a stable 8% annual return today. Visit pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets to learn more about the fund. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets.
Melissa from The Traveling Wallet, I am so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast. How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you, Mindy and Scott, for having me over. I look forward to seeing how this conversation evolves.
Me too. I already know a lot of your story, so I don't want to give, you know, the whole story away, but I really like the way that your story goes. I like that you had this. I mean, I don't love it. Like, you had a spoiler alert. There's a huge piece of adversity coming up in Melissa's path, but I love how you overcame it and how you didn't let that define you and you didn't let that stop you. And that is, you know, everybody has things that they face in their life. I have things that I face. Scott has things that he faces. And, you know, the difference between what success and failure is letting it define you. I don't know what that quote is, so I'm going to stop that. But anyway, before I tell your whole story, why don't we let you tell your whole story? Where does your journey with money start?
I would say that my journey with money started in my childhood. And I can really think of three instances where like it defined my money mindset. And one of them was that when I was young in school, my dad really didn't want us working during our schooling. Our job was to study. And that was because he thought that money was a temptation. So he's a salesman. And so depending on how good you sell, you can make a lot of money easily. And so he didn't want us to have that temptation and not pursue our studies. And then the next thing, though, was that they also took us to open our first bank accounts, our first savings accounts. And I believe this was somewhere either at the beginning of high school. And there wasn't a lot of money conversation that went along with that, but just doing that step and showing us the institution of banking and saving, I think, was a big deal. And then the last thing was that we didn't receive allowances growing up. And so we either had to ask for money for the specific things that we wanted to do, or we kind of had to figure it out. And so at some point in high school, I went to one of those big like Costco's in California. It was Smart and Final. And I bought bulk candy and I kind of sold it to my classmates to find a way to make some money.
That is brilliant. That I'm always so impressed when I hear this story. I think Carol Scott from the Bigger Pockets business podcast, she was on our show a few weeks ago. I think she did the same thing. And I think Oddity Shaker also did the same thing. That just never occurred to me as a kid that I could go to one of these bulk stores and buy, like, first of all, you can't buy 36 candy bars. That section is for the convenience stores that shop at Smart and Final. So why would I be able to go over there? Like, I don't know. Sometimes I just get something in my head and I can't, like, that's how it is. You don't question it. And it never occurred to me to actually buy a box of candy. I mean, I probably would have eaten half of them. Let's be honest. I have a sweet tooth like nobody else. But still, that's brilliant that you figured that out in high school. Did you make a ton of money? Like, were you rolling in your 5.0 with your rag top down so your hair can blow? You're not old enough to know that. That's a song, Scott.
Yeah.
So did you make a lot of money selling candy bars?
Well, I think that I did pretty good. I realized that, you know, I had to save a certain amount to be able to buy the next batch of candies to sell. And by the end of high school, I had about $1,000 in the bank. So
that's a lot of money. Yeah, I think that's great. I didn't have $1,000 in my bank account when I graduated high school.
No, I love it. There's an entrepreneurial mindset. There's a hustle work ethic. And then there's a, I'm going to save that and not spend it mindset as well. So I wonder if this will lead to a good money story later on.
Ooh, foreshadowing. So it does, because I know the story, but let's let Melissa tell it. So what happened after high school? You went to college?
Yes. So I decided that I wanted to go out of state. I'm originally from California, and I went to a university called Kettering University in the now infamous town of Flint, Michigan. And the cool thing about that school was that It was actually required to work as part of the graduation requirement. So we went to school for 3 months, then we went to work for 3 months, then we went to school for 3 months, and then we went to work for 3 months. And for that, it was also, the school had a partnership with all the companies they worked for, that these were not internships, unpaid internships. These were co-ops. And so we were earning some money because that was going to help us also pay for our school. That was part of their financial plan, was like, you're going to get to work and that's going to help you pay for school.
Okay. So I was going to ask, were these unpaid internships, which would kind of stink that you're forced into that. So you would study for 3 months and then work for 3 months. Did the work for 3 months part count at all towards your education requirements? Or was it just like, did you double up your school time or did you graduate in 4 years?
So the school program was supposed to take 4.5 years. So there was a little bit of additional time there, but not much.
And did it go through the summer too?
Yes. So their rotation was 3 months, 3 months, 3 months, 3 months. And you were either in the section A or B. And so every time one set of students was at work, the other set of students was at school.
And you're working full time?
Yes, full time.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? I mean, you can, clearly you can, but can you imagine all the work experience you're coming out of college with? I came out of college with like, hey, I can wait tables. That was my work experience, which is good experience to have, but it doesn't like look that impressive when you're passing out resumes. Oh, wow, you're a bartender. How's that going to help me with, you know, typing 60 words a minute? Scott's going to say something now because I'm saying something wrong.
Oh, no, you weren't saying anything wrong. I was just curious about whether it was all the same job or if it was multiple jobs.
So they wanted you to, you know, stay with one company every time you went back. But if you didn't like it, you could find a different, you know, you could throw in your resume and talk to your co-op manager and see about them finding you a different position.
Got it. Which company did you work with?
UPS was my first company that I worked with. And then I worked with a company called Coast Composites, which was in aerospace. And both of those were in California. So I was actually moving back and forth every 3 months.
Oh, man.
Oh, it wasn't local to Michigan. Okay. But you graduated with the equivalent of what? 2 years of work experience? That's so huge. Didn't Craig do that, Scott?
Yeah.
Kurlop.
Craig Kurlop had a similar path where I think it was 6 months. I can't remember.
Yeah. And maybe even Cody Berman.
Yeah.
Did something like that.
That's awesome.
Did that translate to a job after college?
Yes. Yeah, so the second company I worked for, they offered me a full-time job when I graduated.
That was easy, I bet. Relatively. Most college students are probably very much wondering about like, can I get a job? But you're, hey, I'm old.
And when did you graduate?
Well, that's a gray area.
Oh, okay.
I finished all my schooling at the end of 2012. So I started working full-time in 2011, but I hadn't finished my thesis. So my official graduation is 2012 because that's when I finished my thesis paper.
Okay. So, but 2011, 2012, that wasn't like the best time to be looking for a job, was it?
Yeah, I was lucky I was already working with the company I was working with.
Exactly. Yeah, that's even better to get this work study thing. So college was just smooth sailing?
No, it wasn't.
Wow. Did anything happen in college? I don't know how to ask this.
So I ended up getting pregnant while I was in college, and it was not planned. It was very unexpected.
So, yeah. So let's talk about that because I don't know if you know this. This isn't the only, you're not the only person that this has ever happened to. But I know a lot of people who have found themselves pregnant and then they're like, oh, well, I guess I have to drop out of college. Why didn't you drop out of college? Why didn't you take the easy way? It's not the easy way.
It's not the easy way. And I think I already understood that. From being pregnant, I knew that if I wanted to have a good life, then the best thing I could do was finish college and get that career job. But it wasn't easy. It wasn't an easy thing to do.
At what point in your college career did you get pregnant?
So I had my son in 2018, so I was around my junior year. So I got pregnant before that, but, you know, he wasn't born until 2008. I'm sorry. Did I say 2018?
Okay.
Like, so wait, he's bigger than that.
This was early in your college career, right? This is in the first or second year?
I got pregnant in my second year. My son was born in my junior year, my third year.
Got it. And you graduate start full-time work in 2011, but you graduate in 2012.
Yeah, that's when I get my degree.
Got it. So what did that look like in terms of, you know, how did you kind of handle the situation and having a son in college when he was born?
So I have to back up a little here and say that my first year in college was actually kind of a struggle because my family back home kind of imploded and they were being foreclosed on. And so my first year working, I actually had to write two $2,000 checks for my mom to try to kind of prevent them from being foreclosed on. So I was already kind of in this mindset of like being really lean and not having anyone else to fall back on financially. And so when my son was born, I had no expectations that my parents were going to come to the rescue or something like that. And so I knew I had to figure it out and ask for help from where I could. And so the things that I did for like financially, I applied for WIC, Women, Infant, and Children, which is to help with food. And I applied for food stamps while I was in college. And I applied for like medical assistance. I'm not sure if it's Medicaid or Medi-Cal, which one it is, but I applied for all that help because I knew that, you know, it wasn't just me now. I was going to have my son and I wanted to make sure that I had what I needed to be able to take him to the doctors and feed him and all that stuff.
So in terms of those types of resources, did you take on a big pile of debt with those things, even with all those resources that still forced you to take on some debt? Or were you able to break even or save a little bit? Or how did that look?
So pretty much I was already taking on debt in school for my studies. Mm-hmm. I was already having to take student loans for school. And I got a scholarship at one point, which I'm not sure if I mentioned or not, which helped a lot with the cost, but I was already taking out loans. So I was at this point, I don't know if there was a transition there or if I was already kind of maxing them out, but I was maxing out the Stafford loans and the subsidized loans that I could get. I hadn't taken out any like personal loans, but just like the school loans that were offered, I was taking out the max in them. And all those assistance was more for like the food, the more everyday today stuff, because my school loans were covering like my housing and stuff like that.
Got it.
What were you doing for childcare after he was born?
So when he was born, the dad and I were still together. And so we talked about it and he was unsure what he wanted to do with his path. And I was pretty sure about what I was doing. And so he decided to step back from school to be able to take care of our son and do like night classes. So while I was in school, he took care of our son. And whenever we went to my work term, because I still had to keep working, I worked during the day and he would do stuff in the evening. So he would take care of our son in the beginning.
Okay. Okay. And that in the beginning, that's a little foreshadowy.
Yes, yes. At some point, the relationship was, it just wasn't working out anymore. And so one of those terms where I was at work in California, which is where my family's from, my mom also had a change in situation with her work. And so she was able to take on the role of taking care of my son when I was at work. And then she even moved to Michigan with me to take care of my son while I finished my last 6 months of schooling.
Okay. You were able to rely on family at least a little bit. I mean, childcare is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's fast forward to the end of college. Did you graduate on time?
No, I took a little bit longer.
Okay, that's, yeah. I'm not judging. I'm just asking.
No, but you know what? I think that's less my son and more just me. Actually, it's ironic, or I don't know what word you would use, but my best schooling was when I was pregnant and had just had my son. So my first years in college, I think I was just like, you know, regular college student decompressing, maybe not being 100% focused and those years kind of cost me, I think, in down the line. Because once I had my son, I was like, you know, this is what I need to do. And so I was more making up for the mistakes of pre-child.
Okay.
What was your kind of position at graduation then? It sounded like you did a good job of managing the situation. So you kind of just came out with the student loans and not any personal debt. You know, were you able to begin attacking the student loans and paying them down or saving, or did that take a little bit of time to get together after graduating college? Also, what was your major in college?
Okay. I majored in mechanical engineering and I ended up working for an aerospace company. And I was...
She's a rocket scientist.
Wow, don't take the easy way out of anything.
Not a rocket scientist. That would be cool, though. I had the goal that I was going to pay my student loans off as soon as possible. Because I'm an engineer, like math is something that we do. And I understood that the longer I took to pay off my loans, the more money it was going to cost me. And I was like, I don't really want to give them any free money or any more money than, you know, what the actual schooling is worth. And so I made a goal to pay off my student loans in 5 years. And then I was like, but just in case, I'll make a scenario for 6 years. But that was my goal. It was just not an option for me to even consider taking 10 years to pay off my student loans. But I did find out that in that first year, at some point, the timeline's a little blurry, that I did have some personal debt on top of that. Because even though I had applied for medical assistance, love the government, but sometimes they make the mistakes. they had assigned me to like the child care, which runs out when you turn 21. And I turned 21 and then days later had my son. So I was actually getting tons of bills for like the birth and everything.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. Did they switch you eventually? Were you able to work that out?
So while I was in school, after my son was born, I knew I needed to add him to the program so that, you know, he would be covered when I needed to take him for his wellness visits and everything. And so I went there to add him. And that's when I found out that I hadn't been covered. And they'll back rate you like 3 months, but that timeline had already passed. And so I was kind of on the hook for all the bills. And I'm not sure how I found out about this. You can apply to the actual hospitals to have the loans forgiven. And so I was doing a lot of work with like finding all the bills and figuring out what they were for and submitting, you know, letters to like say, hey, I was supposed to be under this coverage and these people were supposed to cover that. And please forgive my debt.
This is awesome. So this is like a key takeaway. Like, honestly, a lot of people I think have a similar experience to this with medical debt, which can feel crippling, but it's imperative if you're listening to this and you have or know someone with medical debt that you, one, go down and do exactly what Melissa just said, understand each bill, where it's coming from, what it is, and then call the owner of that debt, whether it's the hospital or a debt collection agency in some cases, sounds like it was a hospital in your case, and ask and try to negotiate, hey, what is a practical payment here, right? Because a lot of these debts are not paid ever by the person who takes them out. So there's often a great way to get a deal for someone that's in a situation like you found yourself in. So great tip. And how much did that save you?
Oh, I'd have to look, but I would say it's like in the $10,000 or something like that. I'd have to look it up. I don't have that number, but
that's okay.
Yes.
It saved you a lot of money.
Yeah. And actually, Scott, you mentioning debt collectors, now I know that was actually the trigger. At one point, I got a debt collector's letter and I'm like, what's going on? Why am I getting this bill? And we had to call and they were willing to have us pay 50% of the value or something. And that's, I think, what opened the door for me to realize like, oh, you know what? Maybe there's something I can do about this.
Got it. So-
yeah. I'm going to add on to when I had my second daughter. I had like my first daughter cost, I don't know, a dollar out of pocket or something. I had great insurance. My second daughter was like $1,100 was my portion of the bill, which is still nothing because she was a C-section. But she was born at the beginning of November. The bill started coming at the end of November, which is when Thanksgiving is and Christmas and, you know, all this stuff. So my husband and I were talking and I'm like, it's just going to be really tight this month to pay this whole thing. He's like, call them up and see if you can pay half now and half next month. And I said, oh, okay. So I called them up and I said, yeah, I wanted to talk about making payments on my bill. And they said, well, we can split it up into 11 payments, but if you need more than that, then we'll have to put you through to the credit department. I'm like, nope, I'll take 11 payments. I was looking for two, but 11's even better. So every month for 11 months, I wrote a $100 check to buy my baby.
Yeah.
That's not the right way to phrase that. You know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, just ask if you have like a giant bill, just ask for, you know, can I get a payment plan? Can I get a reduction? You know, I didn't ask for a reduction because I felt $1,100 was pretty fit. Well, you know, whatever.
I think the point is, especially with medical debt, because I've just heard now so many anecdotal cases. I'm sorry, I don't have statistics to back up that, but it seems that perhaps a significant majority of the time when you are in either a low-income situation, maybe your situation would have qualified as a college student for some of this, or if you have bad credit, or if the bills are in collection, that there just seems to be a very high probability of getting a significant reduction. And this could be a thousands of dollars an hour phone call or set of phone calls exercise to go out and attack. And I just think that the hustle here is amazing. So.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
Okay, so you graduate college and you find out after a period of time goes by, you find out you've got some loans, some personal debt that accumulated with this medical bills. You've got your student loan position. What is kind of your ability to save in terms of your income minus your expenses at this point? How do you begin implementing that plan to pay off your loans in 5 years?
So because I was living so lean in college, I never really upgraded from that. So I went from earning money 6 months out of the year to earning full-time, you know, a full-time salary at an increase as an engineer. And I just didn't update things. I was really fortunate. I still needed my mom to help me with my son, and she had all her stuff. And so we just kind of lived together, and I was able to save myself on any costs of like furniture and things like that because we just used what she had. And so I was really focusing on paying off my debt and also like opening up my 401k. Like that was also a priority. So for me, I mean, just the increase in money, I was able to say like, you know, this is how much I'm spending on my expenses, you know, the rent, the food, and this is how much space there is now for other things. And I just made it a priority to pay off my debt. Like I was spending about 75% of my rent, like on debt. So I it was almost taking up as much money as my rent was to pay off my debt.
Okay. I just want to back up a minute and pat you on the back for wanting to open up your 401k, even though you had student loan debt, you had this unexpected hospital debt, you have a brand new baby, and you decide to open up a 401k too. I know people who have none of that other stuff and still don't open up their 401k. If you're listening to this, open up a 401k because Melissa did it, so you can do it too. I don't care what your circumstances are, you can open up your 401k.
Yeah,
now I'm going to get 300 emails. I can't open up my 401k because of this specific circumstance.
What was the reason for the 401k?
So at one point while I was in college, my brother told me about that scenario that everyone tells you about where, you know, if you start saving now in your 20s, you're going to have more money than if you start saving in your 30s and you save for a longer time. Like he just kind of explained that rationale to me. And so again, I was like, that's just the best deal. You have to do that. That needs to be a priority. And also there was a 401k match and I understood that I wasn't going to get that if I didn't contribute. So it's like a raise you give yourself. At least that's what I would tell people at work. It's like you're complaining about not getting, you know, more than a 3% raise, but you're not opening your 401k up. Like you're leaving all this money on the table. You can give yourself a 3% raise by opening up this 401k. It was illogical not to, in my mind.
Absolutely love it. And what you're saying is it was a priority, so I did it. Right. And this concept is so hard for people, right? They're like, how do I do that? No, if it's a priority, you will find a way to do it. Let me ask you this. Were you living in a penthouse suite downtown, driving a foreign luxury vehicle and getting a latte every morning and having a expansive nightlife during this period while you contributed to your 401k, paid off your debt, raised your child, and were getting started in your career?
No, I did not.
What a leading question, Scott.
Yeah. What a shock. No, can you tell us about what your lifestyle looked like and the sacrifices you maybe made on that front in order to make this possible?
Well, because my mom was helping me out, she wasn't working. So I was essentially supporting her as well. And so we had a 2-bedroom apartment. My son was with me. You know, we had furniture and everything we needed. We weren't eating ramen noodles, I can tell you that much. Like, that was not a thing. But it was a thing in college, so I will say that. When I was in college, I was eating that. But I spiced it up. I threw some, like, frozen vegetables and eggs in it, you know, made it fancier. But
it's a rite of passage.
Yeah, once I had my career job, we were not eating that kind of food. But I had an old car, and actually people made fun of me for my car at work. Like, they did. Mindy, I wish I would have done that. I wish I would have just thrown my shoulders up. But no, I did not. And so in May, I ended up buying a new car. And I made...
This past May?
No. So I started January 2011 working full time. And then in May, I bought a car.
Got it.
Okay. Bad idea.
It's okay. There's worse things you can do. Like, I don't know, invest in Bitcoin.
Not making your 401k and taking the match of priority.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a much worse idea, because I bet that you have a lot in your 401k balance right now.
I do have a good amount. I don't know. Should I be sharing numbers?
Only if you're comfortable with it. But yeah.
We don't need to know the amount in your 401k, but it would be great to know about your savings, like how much you're able to put away every month and those types of things.
So like when I just started, I was putting 10% in to my 401k.
That's huge.
On top of, you know, so that was like a $5,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So I don't care about sharing my earnings back then. Who cares? $50,000.
That's huge. 10% of your earnings when you have all this college debt and a baby and you're a single mom and you're living with your mom and you're supporting your mom. 10% is enormous.
Yeah, it's great. Really good. What about with debt? How much were you able to pay off with your debt?
So I don't have exactly how much I was able to pay off each year. I was more focusing on how much I was putting in, I guess. And I was putting in like about $800 a month. So, because it's hard to track like the balances, because that's my second, that's another tip I would say that kind of goes with like getting your medical bills forgiven, is being aggressive when it comes to your student loans and having to call. I was calling, I feel like, the people who held my student loans like once a month, because whenever I was making these extra payments, I wasn't paying the minimum, you know, I was paying extra. And when I was making these payments, what they were doing was they were just pushing off the due date for my next payment. So they were not deducting the principal. And so I had to be on top of them over and over again to make sure the money was going where I wanted it to go. And I know that that was an issue with a lot of people I talked to. It was like, why can't I just make it go and pay this off? Why are you, you know, just pushing off the date and continuing to accrue all this interest? Like, I'm making the extra payment. This is where I want it to go. And so definitely having to be aggressive.
That is huge. That happens on mortgages. That happens. I don't know about car loans because I've never had a car loan. Well, that's not true. I had one at 0%. So why would I pay that off early? But my parents were very generous and paid for my college. But I have noticed on mortgages, when you send in extra payments, they're like, oh, where do you want this to go to? The principal, the interest. Why would I want to pay interest up front? Why would I want to pay more interest early? That's the dumbest question ever. Throw it at the principal. What else am I going to do with it? So that was always a little frustrating to me too. But that's a huge tip. Be aggressive. Read your bank statements. Read your student loan statements. Read your mortgage statements. Like, whatever bill that's coming in, read it. First of all, make sure that that's actually what you were charged. Did you go through and make sure that all of those charges on your credit card bill are actually something that you charged? Your card. My husband checks our bank balance, our credit card statements every single day. But that was, he was able to find out that somebody had stolen. You know he does that, Scott.
I know, but the way you just said it was so defeated.
Like every, I just can't imagine looking at it every day. But anyway, it gives some joy. But he was able to discover that our card was stolen and used to put an ad on Auto Trader. Like, really? $7? You stole my credit card for $7? I almost want to just pay that for you, because clearly you need to sell that car. But yeah, like when your mortgage comes in, keep the statements. And do they still have mortgages? Like mortgage statements? We still get a statement.
Yeah, I get a statement every month.
Okay. So look and make sure that your balance is correct and make sure that you're paying, you know, it was applied towards your principal. It just takes a second if you do it over and over and over again, but you want to make sure that you are doing this every single month because banks make mistakes. I don't want to accuse banks of acting nefariously, but we all know that happens, allegedly.
Yeah.
So that's a great tip.
Yeah. I had never heard of that before, that there is a difficulty in sending your student loan providers extra money and having that paid to where you want it to go. So I think it's a fantastic tip for everyone who's listening to make sure that they kind of... One question I would have is, are you aware of any ways to refinance, any companies that you can refinance your student loan with that make that an easier or more automatic process? Or is that not something that any of us know here?
No, I don't know because it's not something that I chose. It's not a path I chose to go down. Yeah, I'm like, I can deal with all these people. And it was quite a few people. It was, I think, 4 different companies that I had to be on top of regularly to make sure the money was going in the right place.
Okay. I know that SoFi started off as a student loan refinancer, however you say that, because there was a bunch of these guys that got together. I think it was all guys. I'm not being sexist. They got together and they're like, why is my student loan interest rate 8%? Let's buy this down. So they will help you refinance your student loans. But I don't know anything else about that. So yeah. SOFI.com.
I think doing some research to, if you have student loans, to think about who can help me refinance to a smaller rate, who can simplify this process to me. Even if you don't get a better rate, if you're able to just simplify the process without incurring too much in the form of like origination costs or anything like that, it might make life a little easier for those of you listening that are trying to attack the same problem Melissa had.
Yeah, maybe consolidate them so you're making one payment instead of like 4 payments or 12 payments or whatever.
Yeah.
We should get Travis Hornsby from Student Loan Planner.
Hero?
I'm Student looking Loan it up Hero. Right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I'm sorry, Travis. he was on our show 22, I think.
Yeah, Student Loan Planner. Travis Hornsby, Student Loan Planner. Yes.
Okay. So yes, we should get him back on for some tips too. That would make a really good little pullout episode. Okay. Anyway, this isn't his show. This is your show. Back to you. Okay. So you're paying off your debt. You were paying $800 a month towards your debt. How long did you take to pay off your student loans?
So it's so hard to segment things because, you know, more life happens in there. So not only was I paying $800, every time I would get a tax return, like that's where my money went. Like I would throw any extra tax return money I got into my student loans. So it fluctuated how much it was every year. In the process, I got married and my husband had student loans and he sold his old car and he wanted to buy a new car. And so I can only really speak about this as a whole picture because it's hard to do the math separately. But after 3.5 years in 2014, we had paid over $110,000 in 3.5 years with all our student loans and both our cars. So we paid off our cars early because we didn't see the point in extending the process.
Wow. So your nuclear option, you never needed to go that extra year. You did it in half of that extra year. That's amazing. Now, you said that you took extra money and you threw it at your student loans. I think that that's really, really smart. I think a lot of people, I've heard this so many times, like, oh, I've got my tax return. I'm going to go on a vacation because I deserve it. No, pay off your loans first, pay off your debt first, you know, and that's just great. I love that.
Yeah, it was a huge priority. And that was what I was doing with our tax return money.
With this, it sounds like, I mean, $100,000 is an incredible amount of money to pay off in 3 years. Would you say were you able to kind of keep your expenses low after you got married? And then were your incomes generally increasing over the years as well? Were those kind of the two main drivers, basically not too many changes in lifestyle front and big incomes, or is there any other color there?
Once we got married, we started to slowly join our finances and yes, he and I would get raises, but they were like the standard, you know, 2%, 3% per year. Nothing too crazy, I don't think. And then once we got married, he moved in. And so it lowered our costs because, you know, now he wasn't paying for his own rent and I was paying for mine. We could, you know, start separating, you know, dividing those costs among the two of us.
Got it.
We know you've heard it before. Cash flow is getting very hard to find. There's always long distance investing, but you may be thinking, I don't have a team, enough experience, or the market knowledge to get in. That's where you're wrong. And it's also where Rent to Retirement comes in. Rent to Retirement offers fully turnkey properties that are newly built or renovated, leased and managed, allowing you to invest out of state with confidence. They've got single family, multifamily, new build, and syndication opportunities across multiple markets. They even have BRRRR deals with immediate equity. Rent to Retirement helps investors learn how to build a bulletproof business plan with the best investment and tax strategies around to help you reach financial freedom through real estate. There's no excuse not to get started in real estate investing when you have the right team and systems already in place. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com.
Or text REI to 33777. Again, text REI to 33777.
Listen up, business owners. Here's some quick math. Fewer costs equals more profit. The problem? You're spending more than ever on operations, materials, deliveries, software, and more. So why not reduce your costs and headaches with NetSuite by Oracle? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite lives in the cloud, which means you can reduce IT costs with no hardware required. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because now you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. It makes sense that over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Don't let rising costs sink your business's growth. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/bpmoney. That's netsuite.com/bpmoney. netsuite.com/bpmoney.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
Okay, so it's safe to assume that you do not have a cash flow negative spouse. Is that correct? You and your husband are on the same page financially?
Yes, he is also a saver. He was paying off his debt too, but anything extra, he had a big savings account on the side because, you know, we weren't really sure what to do with it.
Yeah. Hey, I am two savers is good. I don't want to like bash people who aren't savers, but it's just better when you don't have to spend every dime you touch. Okay. So you said that you got married and he moved in with you. Was your mom still living with you? And if not, what was going on with childcare then?
Yeah. So when I got married, my mom was still living with us and she continued to provide childcare for some time after that. But then we did have a change in situation and she ended up going back to work. And it was a really crazy 2 weeks to try to figure out what was going on. It was kind of abrupt. And my husband and I were taking vacation days. I ended up taking my kid to work a couple of days, I think, for a couple hours to get some things through. But I went into my boss's office and I was like, I need to talk to you. And I remember him saying something like, please don't tell me you're leaving. And I was like, I don't want to, but I need to change my schedule. And so the only thing we could figure out to solve the problem quickly was going on opposing shifts. And so I knew my company had a night shift, like in the manufacturing plant, there was a night shift, and they had been talking for a while that they wanted to have some engineering coverage during the night shift, but it didn't exist. So I was essentially asking to make my own little thing. And so I was able to pose the hours that I wanted. And I ended up working from 4 in the afternoon to 1 in the morning to do a full shift. But it was much more preferable than starting at 6 p.m. and getting out at God knows when. But that's what we ended up doing to deal with the change in our childcare situation.
Okay, this is another amazing kudos to Melissa, because if you don't ask for it, just Scott, what am I thinking right now? Can you read my mind?
Yes, I know exactly what you're thinking. You're thinking you need to ask for what you want and maybe they say yes.
Okay, so I have the one boss on earth that actually can read minds. But for everybody else listening who doesn't work for Scott, your boss can't read your mind. And Melissa went into her boss's office and said, hey, I need to talk to you. And your boss is like, oh my God, don't quit. You never know what your boss is going to say until you ask. And, you know, oh, I'm just going to quit. Well, maybe they would have worked with you. Ask for what you want.
I see what you're going for there, Mindy. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. You are one of a kind, Scott.
There you go.
But I love that you went in and asked, hey, what's going on? Can't continue. It doesn't work for me. Can we switch it around? Is way better for a boss than I got to quit.
Yeah.
Maybe you're mad and they are like, oh, okay, bye. But they don't know that you're happy and want to stay. You just can't work with it in your current situation. And if you've already made up your mind that you have to change something, ask for what you want. If they say no, at least you asked.
Yes. And I do think that when you go into it, you have to be ready for it to be a no though. And so that happened in 2015. So thankfully we were already done with all our debt repayment. And actually when I had my son, because of the situation I was in, I hadn't been able to even take like my full 6 weeks to recuperate before getting back to work because I didn't have that luxury. And I had made the decision back then that, you know, when I have my next child, I am going to take a full year off because I want to be with my kid that first year. And so when I was asking, I was like, well, if they say no, then it's okay because I'll be able to accomplish that other goal of, you know, spending a year with my daughter who was born in 2013. So I had the option of having different opportunities, I guess, of kind of being a win-win for me.
Yeah, fantastic. But like you put yourself in the position. Like there's a direct, in my opinion, correlation between your financial position and the amount of luxury you have coming into these things. Someone who with $50,000 in student loan debt, who's living paycheck to paycheck, is not going to have the ability, maybe the confidence, to ask for what you asked for, I think. And the fact that you had such a strong savings rate, had paid off all your debt, I think that, you know, look, probably the answer would just be no, and you keep your job anyways. But perhaps enabled you to feel a little bit more confident about that decision, or at least may allow many other people to feel more confident about that decision.
Yes.
How did you think about investing once you paid off all your debt?
So in the process of, around 2014, I discovered the FIRE movement through Mr. Money Mustache. And so that was, I feel like, a big motivator of why we were able to pay off our debt so fast. Because we were being aggressive, but it was kind of this 5-year plan. And once we realized that, you know, oh, having this money, we had money in savings accounts too, and being like, oh, this money is earning 0.0001%. And it's not doing the most that it can do. Why don't we take a big chunk of that money and put it into our debt? And that really accelerated our payment paying off our debt quicker. And so because we were living, I don't use the word frugally very much, but I guess that's what it is. And so when we paid off all our debt, we had all that money that we were putting towards our debt. And now we could start funneling it into our 401ks and IRAs. And I think that's also when I discovered the Mad Scientist and I found out about like, hey, if you put your money here, then you actually pay less in taxes. And so you technically get to keep more of your money. And so we decided that we were going to start maxing out our 401ks and maxing out our IRAs. And that was kind of the transition there. Was as soon as we finished paying off our debt, we just funneled all that money into the other vehicles.
This is so great. Everything you're saying here, I think it's outstanding. What are you going to do next now? Like, what's kind of your next big goal with this? It sounds like your goal was, hey, we're going to start giving away less and less money to the government, tax optimize. What is it now?
So in 2014, we decided like, hey, this FIRE thing sounds pretty cool. We want to also retire early and we're going to do it when we're 40. And so that's why we're going to, you know, maximize all these accounts. But in 2015, after working night shift for 9 months and it being a really difficult situation, I was barely seeing my husband for like 15 minutes when we were trading off the kids. I was laid off. And so I got to kind of start my year of not working. And it turned into more than that. So we're still saving aggressively, but I was able to take 3 years off of work. And in that time, we did a little mini retirement. We relocated to Michigan. And now we're still on track to retire by 40. So.
Wait. You're on track to retire by 40 after having an unplanned pregnancy in college and getting laid off and not working for 3 years. And what else? Scrambling for child? Like, that's not right. You can't do that. Sorry.
We still have half the show left.
Yeah. So what field does your husband work in? You work in mechanical engineering for an aerospace firm. I'm guessing that pay is more than minimum wage.
Yeah. So
you're off for 3 years. So this is before or after the 3 year that you're asking this question, Mindy?
So you have a job now, correct?
I did start working this past year, but I actually started working at my kid's school as a helper, making the least amount of money I've ever made in my life.
Got it.
But the reason I did that was because I wanted the flexibility. And, you know, and we, like you said, Scott, before, like we were able to put ourselves in a position where my husband's income, we can still save with that. And I don't need to work, but I wanted to work. And so I did something where I'm technically getting paid to see my kids. How awesome is that?
Wait, I don't get paid to see my kids. So you have a job now. What industry does your husband work in?
So he also graduated as a mechanical engineer, and currently he's working in the aerospace industry, but Michigan is more automotive industry. So yeah, he's in the aerospace industry right now, but.
Okay.
Okay. So, and how old are you now?
I am 32.
Okay. So in 8 years, you're going to retire with having spent time with your kids and still be retired at 40. And living the life you want to live. You said you don't like to say I'm living frugally. I don't call it living frugally. I call it just living normally because I'm not a spendy kind of person. It makes me uncomfortable to just spend. I would rather have that money in my bank account to cover me. You know, I don't have a lot of really nice things. And then when I get something nice, I'm like, ooh, this feels uncomfortable. But that's just me. You know, I'm not saying you can't have nice things. That's maybe me going off on a tangent that I should stop.
No, I agree, because that's one of the reasons I don't like to say I'm living frugally, because I feel like I'm still spending good amounts of money on the things that are important to us. Like while we lived in California, we used to travel to Michigan to see my husband's family because he's originally from Michigan. And we would do that about twice a year, a family of four. And we still got to go to the beach and hang out and do fun things. And so it's like, I don't feel like I'm being frugal because I'm still like doing all these fun things. So,
yep. I love it. I love it. Scott, do you want to add anything else?
No, I think this has been an incredible story. It seems like
this is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a great journey and that you kind of overcame a lot of really cool things. Is there any other kind of areas of your journey that you think you want to mention? Any other new big shifts or anything like that?
Well, I do want to say, because this is always something that bothers me when I read other people's stories, is that we did make good incomes. And I don't mind sharing it now because I'm not working in that industry. So I don't mind sharing old information. But at our most, you know, we were able to make $130,000 together. But before that, that wasn't the case. You know, I don't want that money to kind of overshadow what happened before that. Before that, before I was married, before starting my full-time job, you know, I was not earning that money. I was only working 6 months out of the year, and I had to kind of find a way to support myself with that and student loans and just asking for that help through government programs. And so I think that's important. I think it's important to realize that just because we were able to make a good amount of money, that only was for 1 year before I got laid off, that there was a process, there was steps, and it didn't start at that level. It started somewhere else.
You went to college, got pregnant. You went to a college with 3-month shifts where you worked for 3 months. You got scholarships. You took on some student loan debt. You graduated as a single mom, and you got nothing to disclaim or anything like that about your income and the situation that you were able to create for yourself and your family in the years that followed that as an engineer, right? And this, like, that is very impressive. And I don't think I'm defensive of the fact that you feel the need to qualify the fact that you made a lot of income. All of the decisions you made in your life around, and as it pertains to this financial story that you told today, those are all intertwined. And the fact that you managed to earn a high income after the path that you took is no surprise, right? Many people, I think, you know, there's a lot of situations, hey, I'm going to go into debt and that's going to be accompanied by a low paying work or a career, a field that doesn't have the potential to scale like that, or those types of things, right? I mean, no, these are all seem like a set of decisions that lead to that outcome, right? And when you save and invest, and those are a priority, as you mentioned, right? The income tends to follow in the years following, right? 5, 7, 10 years on those career tracks. So I think it's great. And it's certainly no surprise to me that there was a high household annual income after a certain number of years.
Yeah. And I'm going to jump in here and say that anybody who has a problem with your story and all the things that were handed to you can email me at Mindy@biggerpockets.com and I will set you straight, because how much of this was handed to you? Nothing. You worked for it all. You earned it all. And I think there is nothing wrong with making a high income that you deserve to make. You're in mechanical engineering doing like NASA stuff. Or aerospace stuff. It's, you didn't work for NASA, but like still, you know who doesn't do that? This girl. I don't do any of that.
Many people can't graduate college and get the degree that you got without kids, right?
Yeah.
My rant is coming to a conclusion here, but I think everyone gets the point.
Yes. Yes. You don't need to worry about, you know, oh, it wasn't always, it wasn't always $130,000 a year. But there are also people who make $130,000 a year who spend at least $130,000 a year. Being frugal is nothing to be ashamed of and nothing to apologize for. And that's just how you win. Okay. End rant.
All right. Should we do the famous four here?
We should do the famous four. Melissa, are you ready for the famous four? These are the same four questions and one command that we ask of all of our guests. First up, what is your favorite finance book?
I just finished reading How to Quit Like a Millionaire by Christy. I forget her last name, but I really enjoyed that book because it was an easy read. It kind of read like a story, and she kind of drew me in because of her like minority/immigrant status, which I can relate to a lot in that sense. And so, yeah, I think that's a really good book. And she does throw a lot of hard numbers out there and have a lot of graphs that can kind of help you figure out your own situation. So I think that's a great read.
Yep. That's by Christy Shen and Bryce Leung. And if I pronounce your name wrong, Bryce, I'm sorry. And that is, they were on our show episode 55 and 55 and a half. And she's an amazing speaker. And her book is fantastic.
And they were very methodical about their approach. I recommend you check out their podcast and consider their book. Okay, what was your biggest money mistake?
Well, I would say that kind of falling into that trap of like the normal life path and buying the car was one of the big mistakes I made. And I mean, I guess we can just focus on that one. There's a few other ones, but...
Well, I think it's awesome that you said that was your biggest money mistake, because I think that that's a very classic one. And I think you had so many other things that were adversities. Like, for example, I want to know, what do you think, looking back, there was anything you could have done to solve that problem of the insurance cutting off at 21 and then not having the baby 8 days later? Was there like a bridge program or something along those lines?
I think that, yeah, I guess that's a much more bigger financial maybe weight. I think, like I said, they do back rate it for 3 months, as my understanding is, when you get government help like that. And so I guess the biggest mistake was not finding out sooner, because then it would have covered that time. If I would have found out sooner, it would have back rated and covered all those bills. But because of the time when I found out, yeah, I had kind of missed the window. And then I was, you know, hustling, trying to figure out how to get them resolved a different
way. It was a very specific thing that kind of stood out to me as a huge consequence that, like, how would you ever know that, you know? But
yeah.
And be on top of that. But
did they send you letters? I mean, I've been a new mom and there's not a lot of sleeping. There's not a lot of coherency. And, you know, that just seems weird that you would apply for this. They put you in the kid program, and then right after you turn 21 and fall out of the kid program, then you have it's just, you know, bad timing.
Yeah, it is bad timing. And I think, I'm sure they did send letters. But again, the problem with me was I was moving so frequently and usually to different places that I'm sure that contributed to it too, that I just was hard to get to, which, you know, I guess bit me in the butt at some point.
But then you learned your good tip to always negotiate with the hospitals. Yeah, they would much rather have some money than no money at all. Okay.
Yep.
What is your best piece of advice for people who are just starting out?
So I would say that when you say just starting out, I'm thinking of someone who's just graduating college and everything like that. And so I kind of mentioned it earlier, and it was just like being on top of all the loans, because if you're going to be making payments, you really want to make sure that the money is going to the right place. It's going to make a big difference once it starts compounding if the money's going in the wrong place. So like being really attentive and persistent around that debt repayment, and just keep living the frugal lifestyle or the college student lifestyle for, you know, a couple years. Like, there's really no need, I think, to like suddenly inflate your lifestyle in those first years, especially if you have student debt. So I would say, you know, would be
I'm going to go one further and say, if you have a crappy car that runs, just like, people were teasing you. And I've been on the end of that teasing, because I've always had crappy cars. I just don't care. So, but if people are teasing you about your car, they're not going to remember in a year what kind of car you had. Even, I mean, unless you're still driving it. And even then, like, who cares? Coco Chanel has one of my favorite quotes. She's like, I don't care what you think about me. I don't think about you at all. Like, don't worry about what people think and they're teasing you about your car. Yeah, it's nice to have a great car, but it's even nicer to have money in your bank account. Okay, public service announcement over.
I just want to chime in that I agree. And I think I'll phrase it this way. I think the stakes are incredibly high for getting it right out the gate from college. I think it makes, I've had, relatively speaking, I think a very easy journey with money over my career, because I just continued living the college lifestyle out of college. Never driving a nice car, never spending outlandishly, always living with a roommate, all those kinds of things the entire time. And it's just enabled me to have a high savings rate, made things relatively easy in a lot of ways. And I think it's much harder, or so I gather, after in your 30s and 40s to continue to have that college lifestyle going and save a lot of money. We'll see. All right. What is your favorite joke to tell at parties?
Oh, dear. Okay, let's see if I remember this one. A patient goes to his doctor and says, "Doctor, can you give me something for my leg?" The doctor says, "I don't really need it, but I can offer you a dollar if you're really desperate."
I'm so confused. This one's not clicking for me.
give me something for your leg, for my leg. Did I say my leg or your leg? Anyways.
All right, I'm gonna go home with yourself for this one because this one's eluding me for the moment.
did you get it, Mindy? Did I say it wrong? Take two?
Mindy, we can't hear you.
I keep muting myself so I can take notes. Scott, can you give me something for my car? I'm trying to sell it to you. Got Doc, can you give me something for my leg? Oh, I don't really need it, but I can give you a dollar.
Okay. All right. I'm slow today. It's hot in here.
It's hot in here too. I'm at home
really
too.
Hot. All right.
Okay. Last, tell me where people can find out more about you.
People can find me at travelingwallet.com. And I also have a Twitter at travelingwallet.
Awesome.
Okay. We will link to these in the show notes, which can be found at biggerpockets.com/moneyshow90. Melissa, thank you so much for telling your story today. I think it's really important to tell like every story to show, you know, it's not just people who were great with money who got great jobs after they went to college that was paid for and lived happily ever after. Sometimes life jumps out and is like, oh, you think you're doing well? Here's a curveball. So I think it's a great story. And I'm so happy that you were able to share it with us today.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you both so much.
Okay. And we will talk to you later.
All right. That was Melissa from travelingwallet.com and at travelingwallet on Twitter. Go check her out. Incredible story. Love everything about it. And I think I could just boil down all the things we heard today to a simple phrase. She made this a priority, right? And I think it really is as simple as that when you compound it over time, right? You can memorize all these details and have every tactic in the world, investing tip, try to, you know, whatever. But if you just make it this a priority, financial freedom, the accumulation of wealth, saving, whatever you want to call it, you're going to be successful over time, no matter really what circumstances you start in. And, you know, that might be too bold or too broad of a statement, but I honestly believe that, you know, we've heard so many stories from people coming from all these different types of situations, finding success with this.
Yeah. You know, I really can't top that, but I'm going to try. I'm not going to try and top it. I'm going to try and comment on it. That is a perfect summation of this. She made it a priority. You know what? When you have a nice car, you want to buy a nice car, you make that a priority. If you want to have, you know, fancy clothes, you make that a priority. If you want to have amazing hair all the time, you make that a priority. If you want to have financial independence, if you want to live the life that you want to live, then you have to make it a priority. And that is as simple as that. So what I should have said, but I wanted to say all that, what I should have said is to quote Charlie Munger from the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting, I have nothing to add.
Oh, yeah.
He says that. And so people ask questions and Warren Buffett will talk for like an hour. And Charlie's like, I have nothing to add. Which means I agree with what Warren said. I love him so much. Oh my goodness. If you know Charlie and he would be on our show, I would love to have him.
There's a book called Poor Charlie's Almanac, which Carl actually introduced me to.
Yes.
And it's a great read. It's really, really long. It was kind of expensive, but really got a lot of value out of that book, which is kind of the wit and his humor from that. So.
Yeah, the wit and wisdom of Charlie Munger, who is 96, I think, and he's smarter than any 1,200 other people that you know.
And a
okay.
billionaire.
What?
And a billionaire.
And a you know, whatever. Is he still a billionaire? I think he's not technically a billionaire anymore because he gives it all away to nice people or deserving people. So
scratch that. Then.
Yeah. And barely a billionaire to quote Gary Gulman. Okay. Anyway, from episode 90 of the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, I am Mindy Jensen and this is Scott Trench and we are going to go be productive. Wait, this was productive too. What are we going to do? Over and out. Goodbye.
Something else. Bye-bye.
Yep. Yep. Bye.
The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed.
You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into real estate investing or take it to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With the BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
BiggerPockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.